Last week we started looking at the third generation of the patriarchs. We've been talking about Abraham, we then talked about Isaac, and then last week we started looking at a couple of new guys, the third generation, Jacob and Esau. And we saw some stories about them when they were young, when they were older, and we saw that one of them, the one who was chosen to be the child of the covenant, that is Jacob, had to leave. And so that's our story today, is what happened when he left. And where did he go? What happened there to him? And then the story of him coming back. So our story today is Jacob flees and returns. We've got a lot of chapters to cover from Genesis 28 through chapter 36. And you see, we don't get to chapter 28 until the very bottom of page 1. So we've got a lot of ground to cover. Your homework is to read the exciting chapter of Genesis 36. I'll let you look at that on your own. So we're really just going to go 28 through 35 today. To kind of remind us briefly of where we left off last week, let's kind of look back at some of this. Genesis 25, 24 to 26 reminds us how Jacob and Esau got their names. When we look at that, it says, "When the time came for her to give birth, there were twin boys in her womb. The first to come out was red, and his whole body was like a hairy garment. So they named him Esau, which means hairy. So he was named hairy. After this, his brother came out, and his hand grasped Esau's heels. So he was named Jacob, which means he grasped the heel, which is also a slang way of saying deceiver. Okay, just like what we have today of saying you're pulling my leg. It's the same concept there. Okay, so we have hairy, and we have the deceiver. Okay. When you think of hairy, you think of someone like an outdoorsman, a man of the wild country, rugged kind of thing. If we go on, we see that Esau emulated that. It says, "The boys grew up, and Esau became a skillful hunter, a man of the open country, while Jacob was a quiet man staying among the tents. Isaac, who had a taste for wild game, loved Esau, but Rebekah loved Jacob." So we see that Esau was an outdoorsman. He was a skilled hunter. On the other side, Jacob was an indoor mama's boy kind of person. Okay, so you have a complete contrast between these two guys. And you see that Esau, his name, hairy, and being hairy, that was symbolic of the kind of person that he was. What about Jacob on being called the deceiver? Well, going on, "Once while Jacob was cooking some stew, Esau came in from the open country famished. He said to Jacob, 'Quick, let me have some of that stew. I'm famished.'" That's also why he was called Edom. Edom is a nickname that means red. And that has to deal with his red stew. It has to deal with his red body, his red hair. Jacob replied, "Well, first sell me your birthright." "Look, I'm about to die," Esau said. "What good is the birthright to me?" But Jacob said, "Swear to me first." So he swore an oath to him, selling his birthright to Jacob. Then Jacob gave Esau some bread and some lentil stew. He ate and drank and then got up and left. No remorse. So Esau despised his birthright. So we see, rather than being the nice brother and giving his brother some food after being out working and out hunting and coming in hungry, he deceives Esau for his birthright. We see deceit again in the next story that we looked at in Genesis 27, verses 6 through 7. Starts and says, "Rebekah said to her son Jacob, 'Look, I overheard your father say to your brother Esau, bring me some game and prepare me some wild, some tasty food to eat so that I may give you my blessing in the presence of Yahweh before I die.'" And then we pick up in verse 14. "So he went and got them, brought them to his mother, and she prepared some tasty food just the way his father liked it. Then Rebekah took the best clothes of Esau, her older son, which she had in her house, and put them on her younger son Jacob. She also covered his hands and the smooth part of his neck with the goat skins. Then she handed to her son Jacob the tasty food and the bread she had made. He went to his father and said, 'My father.' 'Yes, my son,' he answered. 'Who is it?' Jacob said to his father, 'I am Esau, your firstborn. I've done as you've told me. please sit up and eat some of my game so that you may give me your blessing. So you see, with the help and encouragement of his mother, Jacob deceives his father to think that he is Esau. And it's not a light deception. This is a flat-out lie. And he flat-out lies and goes through with this scheme of deception to deceive his father to give him the birthright that his father wanted to give to Esau. So we see this deception a couple of times here. So these blessings, and he ends up giving blessings to both sons. What are those blessings? In starting in 28, this is the blessing he gives to Jacob, which he thinks he's given to Esau. He says, "May God give you of heaven's dew and of earth's richness, an abundance of grain and new wine. May nations serve you and peoples bow down to you. Be Lord over your brothers, and may the sons of your mother bow down to you. May those who curse you be cursed, and those who bless you be blessed." So you see, he gives him passes on the blessing of the covenant that God gave to Abraham and to Isaac and now to Jacob. But then Esau wants a blessing. We see in 38, Esau said to his father, "Do you just have one blessing, my father? Bless me too, my father." Then Esau wept aloud, and his father Isaac answered him, "Okay, well, your dwelling will be away from the earth's richness, away from the dew of heaven above. You will live by the sword, and you will serve your brother. But when you grow restless, you will throw his yoke from off your neck." So for Esau, the best that Isaac could come up with for his favorite son was a curse. Because he realized that these blessings and curses were from God, and there's nothing he could do to change that. He had given God's blessing to Jacob. Was Esau cursed because Jacob did right in deceiving Isaac for God's blessing? No, God's plan was not for Jacob to deceive. That was Jacob doing his own thing. If Jacob had not gone through this deception, would the blessing have gone to Esau? No, because it was not God's will. God's will was for the blessing to go to Jacob, and that would have happened. It would have happened in a godly way, not a deceptful way, as Jacob did. The result of Esau being cursed, or Jacob being blessed, more importantly, was God's plan from the start. And that's why it happened, not because Jacob deceived. Esau's now been duped twice, deceived twice. How did he feel about that? Verse 36 of that chapter, Esau says, "Isn't he rightly named Jacob, the deceiver? He's deceived me these two times. He took my birthright, and now he's taken my blessing." So you see that he's upset and he realizes he's been deceived twice. And his response to that in 41 is, Esau held a grudge against Jacob because of the blessing that his father had given him. He said to himself, "The days of mourning for my father are near. Then I will kill my brother Jacob." So he was extremely upset, so upset he wanted to take the path of Cain and kill his brother in response to what his brother had done. But he wouldn't do it while his father was alive, because he didn't want to upset his father like that. So as soon as his father died, Jacob would also be a dead man, was his plan. So there we have the result. Now, Esau was Isaac's favorite. Rebekah, her favorite was Jacob, as we saw in the verse. So Rebekah found out what Esau's plan was. What did she plan to do to protect her favorite son, Jacob? Going on. When Rebekah was told that her older son Esau had said, she sent for her younger son Jacob and said to him, "Your brother Esau is consoling himself with the thought of killing you. Now then, my son, do what I say. Flee at once to my brother Laban in Haran. Stay with him for a while until your brother's fury subsides. When your brother is no longer angry with you and forgets what you did to him, I'll send word for you to come back from there. Why should I lose both of you in one day?" So she decides she's got to protect him. Jacob needs to be protected. And what better way than to send him hundreds of miles away to where he's away from Esau and protected and nothing will happen to him. And you remember the story a few weeks ago. Rebekah came from the line of Abraham's brother Nahor. Nahor's son was Bethuel. Bethuel had Rebekah, was a daughter, and Laban was a son. So she said, "Go to my brother's house in Haran and stay with him till things are safe, and I'll send for you then." But Rebecca couldn't do that. Jacob couldn't do that. If Jacob ran away, Isaac could disown him. It's the father's role to make a decision like this. So Rebecca, this is where we see, well, it's where we see Jacob gets his deceit, but we've seen deceit on the part of Isaac when he was, when he deceived Abimelech, the king of Gerar, saying that Rebecca was his sister, not his wife. Where did he get that? He got that from Abraham, who did that both in Egypt and in the land of the Philistines as well. So we've got deception from that side, but we also see a lot of deception from Rebecca's side. So here we see, we saw Rebecca get involved in the deceit and playing the deceit and stealing the blessing. Now she uses deceit to get Isaac to send Jacob away, to make him think it's his idea. If we remember back in at the end of chapter 26, the last couple of verses, we see that Esau married some Hittite women, some local women, some of the Canaanites, and they were a source of grief, it says, to Rebecca and to Isaac. So she plays on that here. She says, she goes to Isaac and says, "I'm disgusted with living because of these Hittite women. If Jacob takes a wife from among the women of this land, from Hittite women like these, my life will not be worth living." So Isaac called for Jacob and blessed him and commanded him, "Do not marry a Canaanite woman." Okay, Isaac remembers how important the separation thing was. His dad had sent his servant, his chief servant, to go and find Rebekah for him so that Isaac wouldn't marry among the locals. He says, "Go at once to Padan Aram, to the house of your mother's father Bethuel. Take a wife for yourself there from among the daughters of Laban, your mother's brother." Okay, so this ends up protecting him, ends up with the same result that Rebekah wanted, but this is from a totally different perspective that Isaac is involved with here. Now, did Isaac do this to get rid of his less favorite and deceiving son? Well, if you go on, you see that he passes on the blessing. He says, "May God Almighty bless you and make you fruitful and increase your numbers until you become a community of peoples. May he give you and your descendants the blessing given to Abraham so that you may take possession of the land where you now live as an alien, the land that God gave to Abraham." Okay, and then he sent Jacob on his way, and he went to Padan Aram, to Laban, the son of Bethuel the Aramean, the brother of Rebekah, who was the mother of Jacob and Esau. So we see that he wasn't sending him away to get rid of him. He was sending him away to get a wife. And he recognized, although this is not what he wanted, but he recognized that God had chosen Jacob, that the blessing had gone to Jacob. And so this is the covenant blessing that Isaac had been chosen for, not Ishmael. And so he now sees that Jacob was chosen for it, not Esau. And so he supports that, and he passes on that blessing again. Okay, he saw God's hand in blessing Jacob and was remembering the call for the covenant child to remain separate. Now, Esau, as we saw, he lacked the discernment, and he had married these Hittite women. Well, he then hears about his brother leaving to go get a wife and from among the family. So how does he react to that? Well, he says, "When Esau learned that Isaac had blessed Jacob and sent him to Padan Aram to take a wife from there, and that when he blessed him, he commanded him, 'Do not marry a Canaanite woman,' and that Jacob had gone to his father and mother and gone to Padan Aram, well, then Esau then realized how displeasing the Canaanite women were to his father Isaac." You know, he didn't care about his mother, but it was upsetting to Isaac, so that bothered him. So he went to Ishmael and married Mahalath, the sister of Nebaioth, and daughter of Ishmael, son of Abraham, in addition to the wives he already had. So so what we see he does to solve the problem is goes and gets another wife from among the family, or what he thinks is among the family. But here you see his lack of discernment again, in that instead of going to the chosen family, the lineage of Abraham, Isaac, and now Jacob, he chooses from the outcast family, the family of Ishmael, okay, not of the covenant line, just as Esau is not of the covenant line. Okay, so Jacob takes off and heads towards Haran. On the way, he has an encounter with God. And in this encounter, God confirms to Jacob that he is the heir to the blessing. Jacob's running away because his brother wants to kill him. He doesn't know what the future holds for him. He has nothing. He's leaving with his staff is all he's carrying with him. And so he doesn't know, but God assures him that he is the heir to the blessing. We see starting in verse 10 of chapter 28. Jacob left Beersheba and set out for Haran. When he reached a certain place, he stopped for the night because the sun had set. Taking one of the stones there, he put it under his head and lay down to sleep. Well, that doesn't sound like a very good pillow, does it? But actually in those days, that's what they would use, is some hard headrest. He had a dream in which he saw a stairway resting on the earth with its top reaching to heaven, and the angels of God were ascending and descending on it. The stairway that's talked about is like, and probably what is being described here is the sloping stairway that goes up the side of a ziggurat, which is a temple to the gods, a temple tower. The Tower of Babel was one. You think of some of the pyramids, for instance, the Mayan pyramids and the like are the same sort of thing, and you've got these stairways that go up. And so that's the stairway that he saw. He didn't see the ziggurat, he just saw the stairway going to heaven. God came to him in this vision as Jacob traveled to Haran. Now, where he is about 40 miles away from Beersheba. He had traveled over a lot of mountains, so it's been tough travel so far. A lot of distance, difficult distance where he's been, so he's tired. It's been a few days. So, in this vision, what promises did God make to Jacob? Verse 13. Well, there above the stairway stood Yahweh. And he said, I am Yahweh, the God of your father Abraham and the God of Isaac. I will give you and your descendants the land on which you're lying. Your descendants will be like the dust of the earth, and you will spread out to the west and to the east, to the north and to the south. All peoples on earth will be blessed through you and through your offspring. I will be with you. I am with you, and I will watch over you, and wherever you go, I will bring you back to this land. I will not leave you until I have done what I have promised you. So what kind of blessing does God give him, or what kind of promises does he give him? The same blessings and promises that he gave to his grandfather Abraham, to Isaac. He promises the land. He promises many descendants. He promises to protect him. Remember when God told Abraham, I am your shield and your great reward. Same concept. I am with you. You are blessed to be a blessing. Others will be blessed through you. All the nations on the earth will be blessed through you, he says here. So you've got the everything with the covenant he's passing on. Now, why is he doing this now? Well, for one thing, Jacob is leaving his homeland. In those days, people believed that God was the God of the land. And when you went to another land, there was another God. Whatever land you were in, you had to please that God and worship that God. So God makes clear to him, you're not leaving my land. My land is everywhere. I'm the God of all. I will be with you wherever you go. Okay. We'll see, he says that to Jacob again later when Jacob is unsure about going to Egypt, when there's a famine in the land, and Joseph calls his family to come down into Egypt and live off the land, and God tells Jacob at that time, hey, I'm with you wherever you go. I'm God of all. I'm not just God of Canaan. So God reestablishes the covenant here through Jacob. How does Jacob respond to this? Well, in a very similar manner to what his father and his grandfather did. 16 to 19, it says, when Jacob awoke from his sleep, he thought, surely Yahweh is in this place and I wasn't aware of it. He was afraid as a result. And he said, how awesome is this place? This is none other than the house of God. This is the gate of heaven. So early the next morning, Jacob took the stone he had placed under his head and set it up as a pillar, a standing stone, one of these stones that stands straight up. So you look at it and go, okay, why is that stone like that? It's not like that on its own. Someone did that. So that, why did they do it? To memorialize something. And so you have standing stones that people stood up to memorialize things. So he stood up this stone and he poured oil on it and he called that place Bethel, even though the city used to be called Luz. Well, Bethel means house of God. Okay? So, he worshiped God. He set up this altar, or set up this memorial, and consecrated the place with oil. called it the house of God. This is the same place when Abram first came into Canaan. He built an altar at Bethel. We see that in Genesis 12, verse 8. So so that's how Jacob responded to seeing God. How did he respond to the blessings that God had promised? Going on, Jacob made a vow and said, "If God will be with me and will watch over me on this journey I'm taking and will give me food to eat and clothes to wear so that I return safely to my father's house, well then Yahweh will be my God. And this stone that I've set up as a pillar will be God's house, and of all that you give me, I will give you a tenth." Now it sounds like Jacob's trying to make a deal with God. Hey, if you do this for me, and you do this for me, and you do this for me, then I'll pay attention to you. That's not what he's doing, because look at the conditions that he lays out. He says, if God does all these things, then I will. Well, what are those things? Those things are the same things that God has already promised. And God's faithful to his promises. So he's saying, God, because you are going to do all this, because you will be faithful to your promises, and I will be safe, and you will take care of me, and I'll come back to my father's house, and you'll feed me and take care of me while I'm gone, and will watch over me. Because of all that, I'm going to be faithful to you. I'm going to return a tithe. So he pledges his faithfulness is what he's doing here, not in the event that God does these things, but because God's doing these things, as a response to God doing these things. Okay? So there's our stairway to heaven, and very important for setting Jacob on his path. Now, we've seen, like, Abram was 75 years old when he left, and his life as we know it really began. He had completed a full life, but what we really know about Abram and what his life was really all about didn't start till he was 75. Isaac, we see he was 60 before he had the kids. He was 40 when he got married. We don't really know anything about him before that. So he was along in life. We saw last week that this event, the Jacob and Esau event of stealing the blessing, happened when Jacob and Esau were somewhere between 40 and 70. So again, in each case, they were adult men, they'd lived many years, were established, maybe full lives, and yet now their life is beginning. And so this is, things are about to change for Jacob. Okay? All right, so Jacob is on his way to Haran, to Mesopotamia, to meet up with his family and find a wife. How was Jacob able to find this place? He's never been there. He doesn't know these people. how could he find them? Chapter 29, then Jacob continued on his journey and came to the land of the eastern peoples. So he went to the area. There he saw a well in the field with three flocks of sheep lying near it, because the flocks were watered from the well and the stone over the mouth of the well was very large. In verses 4 to 6, Jacob saw these shepherds and he asked them, "My brothers, where are you from?" "Well, we're from Haran," they said. "Ah, hey, that's where I'm going." Okay. He said to them, "Do you know Laban? He's the grandson of Nahor." And they answered, "Yes, we know him." Jacob asked them, "Was he well?" "Oh, yes, he is. And look, here comes his daughter Rachel with the sheep." So how did he find this place? God led him to him. This was the place. He came to the well. Right time, right place to, and what happens? But God brings his future wife to him. Okay? So here you see God's providence that brings him to the right well in the right time in the right place. How does God show his presence with Jacob during this meeting? Back to verse 3, it says, "When the flocks were gathered there, the shepherds would roll this big stone off of the well's mouth and water the sheep." You know, the evaporation in the area is very strong, so they would cover the wells up with a big stone that required a number of people to lift off. And so when all the flocks were gathered, they'd roll that off. They would then return the stone to its place over the mouth of the well after they watered the sheep. Jacob then said, "Look, the sun's still high. It's not time for the flocks to be gathered. Water the sheep and take them back to the pasture." "Well, we can't," they replied, "until all the flocks are gathered and the stone has been rolled away from the mouth of the well. Well, then we'll water the sheep." While he was still talking with them, Rachel came with her father's sheep, for she was a shepherdess. When Jacob saw Rachel, the daughter of Laban, his mother's brother, and Laban's sheep, he went over and rolled the stone away from the mouth of the well and watered his uncle's sheep. So he sees these guys here, and he sees Rachel and the sheep coming, and he says, guys, why aren't you watering your sheep? It's still a lot of daytime left. The sheep should be out eating. Why don't you give them some water and then take them out to the field? He said, no, we have to wait till all of them are here, and that way we'll have enough people to lift the stone off and water them. And, you know, these were hired men. They didn't care as much. They were doing the least that they could. So here you see this superhuman strength that God gives Jacob to lift off this stone and then water his uncle's sheep. He finds out who Rachel is. Well, verse 11, and Jacob kissed Rachel and began to weep aloud. He told Rachel that he was a relative of her father and a son of Rebekah. So she ran off and told her father. As soon as Laban heard the news about Jacob, his sister's son, he hurried to meet him. He embraced him and kissed him and brought him to his home. And there Jacob told him all these things. Then Laban said to him, you are my own flesh and blood. Jacob told Rachel and then told Laban his story. And Laban goes, hey, you're my nephew. Okay, he accepted him as part of the family, this stranger who had just shown up. But there was plenty of information for him to make it clear that, yes, this was my nephew. This is my nephew. So he stayed there and lived with his uncle Laban for a while, and then decided that Laban wanted him to work for him. And we go on. It says, after Jacob had stayed with him for a whole month, Laban said to him, just because you're a relative of mine, should you work for me for nothing? Tell me what your wages should be. Now, Laban had two daughters. The name of the older was Leah, and the name of the younger was Rachel. Leah had weak eyes, okay, not a very good countenance is kind of what that's saying. But Rachel was lovely in form and beautiful. Jacob was in love with Rachel and said, I'll work for you 7 years in return for your daughter Rachel. Okay? So Laban offered to pay him, and he said, What do you want to pay? You know, I'm getting this work out of you. It's not right that I don't pay you something, so what would you like? He said, I'd like the hand of Rachel in marriage. I'll work 7 years. Seven is that big complete number. I'll work forever for you is basically kind of what he's saying. And just give me Rachel as my wife. Now these names, Rachel means ewe, you know, like a nice, pretty little lamb kind of thing. Leah means wild cow. Okay, so their names are somewhat descriptive. And Leah was the older, but she was not as desirable to Jacob here. So how did Laban respond to Jacob's request? Well, Laban said, ah, you know, it's better that I give her to you than to some other man. Here, stay here with me. So Jacob served 7 years to get Rachel, but they seemed like only a few days to him because of his love for her. Well, then Jacob said to Laban, give me my wife. My time's completed, and I want to lie with her. So Laban brought together all the people of the place and gave a feast. But when evening came, he took his daughter Leah and gave her to Jacob, and Jacob lay with her. Okay? Well, how did he not know? Well, they wore veils and kept themselves covered up. So, what happened here? The deceiver Jacob was deceived by the deceiver Laban. Laban accepted the terms of the agreement. Jacob did the work, but then Laban deceived him and switched daughters on Jacob at the wedding. Now, we'd seen Laban's deceitful nature before when the servant of Abraham came with bearing all these valuable and jewels and lots of goods to give to the family of Abraham and to pick up a wife for Abraham's son Isaac. You see Laban falling all over himself to do everything he can to cater to the servant's needs and make him happy because of all the riches that he saw there that he wanted. Okay? So we see the nature of Laban coming out here. Well, okay, why did he do this? And how does he explain? Well, we know why he does it. He wants to take care of his daughter Leah. But how does he explain his action and use it to get 7 more years of work out of Jacob? Okay. Well, when the morning came, there was Leah. So Jacob said to Laban, what is this you've done to me? I served you for Rachel, didn't I? Why have you deceived me? Laban replied, well, it's not our custom here to give the younger daughter in marriage before the older one. You know, Leah, I was hoping she'd get married within 7 years, but she hadn't. So this is the one you get. So finish this daughter's bridal week, okay, give her the honeymoon, and then we'll give you the younger one also in return for another 7 years of work. Okay, so there'd be another 7 years. It would be afterwards. Jacob lay with Rachel also, and he loved Rachel more than Leah. And he worked for Laban another 7 years. So he kept his end of the bargain and ended up with two wives where he was wanting the one, Rachel. And but you see the argument that Laban said, well, it's customary to marry the older one first. And so now Laban gets 14 years of work out of Jacob in response to marrying off his daughters. Okay, well, this last verse here that we read, that Jacob loved Rachel more than Leah, we see that becomes a big problem. Okay, anytime you play favorites, well, we already have seen favorites being played. His dad and mom did that. Isaac loved Esau and Rachel loved Jacob. And you see the problems that resulted from that. Well, does God support playing favorites? No. We see that God... we're called to love our wives, we're called to love our children, we're called to love our family equally, not show favorites and not play favorites. And so God gets involved here. We see going on, we see in, starting in verse 31, when Yahweh saw that Leah was not loved, he opened her womb, but Rachel was barren. Okay? And we then see in the next verses that when he opens Leah's womb, she has babies. She has sons. The greatest thing for Jews is to have a lot of sons. And she has a first one. And you see as you go through their names. And if you look at your NIV footnotes, you'll see the meanings behind those names. And then you can also compare those with, in Genesis 49, the blessings that Jacob gives to his sons and gives prophecies of what's going to happen to them and their descendants. And you see a lot of matching up that these names were meaningful, not only when they were named when they were babies, but they became meaningful later as well. So that's something you can do on the side on your own. But we see four sons that Leah has here. The firstborn son for Jacob is Reuben. Okay, and then she has Simeon, and then she has Levi, and then she has Judah. So there's four sons that come to Jacob through Leah. Reuben, Simeon, Levi, and Judah. Okay? But Rachel was barren. Rachel could not have any kids. So she's there. She's the loved one, but she's not getting the blessings of being a mother. And in Jewish society, in the cultures of those days, that was a very important thing. And the lack of children was a sign of God being displeased with you. And so that naturally upset her, and she was jealous of her sister. So what did she do in response? Chapter 30. When Rachel saw that she was not bearing Jacob any children, she became jealous of her sister. So she said to Jacob, give me children or I'll die. How would you respond if you were Jacob? Well, Jacob became angry with her and said, am I in the place of God who has kept you from having children? Look, I've got all these other kids from Leah, so it's not my problem. Then she said, look, here's Bilhah, my maidservant. Sleep with her so that I can bear children for me, and that through her I too can bear a family. Unique idea, right? Where have you heard that before? Just like Grandma and Grandpa. Just like the same idea that Sarah had. Rachel's got this idea to use her maid. Because whatever children her maid bear, her maid belongs to Rachel, and so therefore those children would belong to her. So if you go on to the next few verses, you see that that this maid has Bilhah has two sons. Okay, she has Dan, and she has Naphtali, and you see the meanings of those if you look at your NIV footnotes. Well, Leah saw what was going on. And what did she think of her sister's tricks? Verse 9. When Leah saw that she had stopped having children, so she had those four sons, then she couldn't have any more. So she took her maidservant Zilpah and gave her to Jacob as a wife. Okay, well, sister, if you can do that, I can do it too. And so Zilpah had a couple of sons, Gad and Asher. Gad and Asher. Now, in those verses is also an interesting story about mandrakes. Mandrakes was a plant that was believed to promote fertility. And so there's a little conflict between Leah and Rachel there. But you see Leah trying to use mandrakes to get herself fertile again to try to have kids. So she's trying to use magic to help her not having kids anymore. Okay. Well, Leah's then able, after her maidservant Zilpah has these two sons, Gad and Asher, she's able to start having kids again. And when she does, she say, oh, that was wrong of me to use my maid. Verse 17:18. Well, God listened to Leah, and she became pregnant and bore Jacob a fifth son. Then Leah said, God has rewarded me for giving my maidservant to my husband. So that was a good thing to do. So she named that son Issachar, okay, which sounds like the word reward. So she ends up having more children. If you go in the next verses, she has Issachar, she has Zebulun. Okay, so we're now up to 10 sons, and she has a daughter, Dinah. Okay, so now Jacob's got 11 kids, 10 sons, and a daughter through this whole contest of the wives. Okay. What did God do for Jacob after ending this competition at 11 kids? Verse 22 through 24. Well, then God remembered Rachel. He listened to her and opened her womb. She became pregnant and gave birth to a son and said, God has taken away my disgrace. So she named him Joseph and said, may the Lord add to me another son. Joseph sounds like may he add. So she got to be pregnant. She got to have a kid. Rachel finally had a kid. After Jacob had 11 sons and a daughter, or 10 sons and a daughter, 11 kids, she finally has a kid. So now she's proud. She goes, well, you know, in this competition, may God give me another one. Here's one. May God give me another one. Okay. How did Jacob feel about the son of this loved wife? Well, in Genesis 37, we see that he loved Joseph more than any of his other kids. Okay. And he wasn't secretive about it. He was very obvious about it. And he praised Joseph in front of his brothers. He gave him this beautiful coat that his brothers didn't have. And as a result, his brothers got jealous. So you see this thing that playing favorites of his parents, that his parents did, just gets worse from generation to generation here. So she also had said, had named him Joseph. May God add to me another son. And she did. We see that in Genesis 35, and we see that when she did have that other son, she died. She died in childbirth. That other son's name was Benjamin. Okay, Benjamin. So there we have 12 sons for Jacob and a daughter. So 13 kids, lucky 13. Okay, so there's our contest of having kids between the wives. All right. Well, after 14 years, we see that now Jacob has paid his debt to Laban for the wives. And but Laban wants Jacob to stay longer. Why is that? Verse 27. Laban said to him, "If I've found favor in your eyes, please stay. I've learned by divination." You see that he's not very, he has many gods, and here he's using divination. "But I found by divination that Yahweh has blessed me because of you." He said, "Name your wages, I'll pay him." Okay? So far, Jacob really has nothing other than his wives and now all these kids. And, you know, he's getting room and board and all of his needs are taken care of while, he's working for Laban. But if he were to leave, he has nothing to take with him. So Laban wants him to stay, not because Jacob needs something to build his household, but rather, hey, while you've been here, things have gotten good. And I've been blessed greatly because of you, so stay here longer. Okay? You name your wages, you name what you want to get paid, and I will pay it. So here we see blessed to be a blessing being recognized. Jacob was blessed, and in turn was a blessing to Laban. So what compensation did Jacob request? Verse 32, he says, "Now let me go through all your flocks today and remove from them every speckled or spotted sheep, every dark-colored lamb, every spotted or speckled goat. That will be my wages. So all I want, you don't need to pay me any money, you don't need to give me any land, just let me have the crummy stuff. Let me have the blemished livestock. Something, you know, sheep that were spotted or wrong color. People didn't want that wool. They wanted the nice, white, nice, clean, pure, clean animals. So give me the unclean stuff. Give me the junk that you don't want." Okay? Well, that sounds okay. So how does Laban respond to that and answer that? Verse 35, it says verse 34, "Agreed," says Laban, "let it be as you've said." And then that same day, before Jacob got to get away from them, he removed all the male goats that were streaked or spotted, and all the speckled or spotted female goats, all that had white on them, and all the dark-colored lambs, and he placed them in care of his sons and sent them off. So Laban agrees to this and says, "Okay, I'll give you all the stuff that doesn't look good. By the way, I don't have any more of those. I just got rid of them." So here we see the deceiver deceiving the deceiver again. Laban cheating Jacob out of this. Well, had Jacob made this request because he knew that God would provide for him and bless him? 37 to 39. "Jacob, however, took fresh-cut branches from poplar, almond, and plane trees." Those are all white trees. By the way, the name Laban means white, so it's kind of a play on his name here that he's deceiving the deceiver here. "And made white stripes on them by peeling the bark and exposing the white inner wood of the branches. Then he placed the peeled branches in all the watering troughs so that they'd be directly in front of the flocks when they came to drink. And when the flocks were in heat and came to drink, they made it in front of the branches, and they bore young that were streaked or speckled or spotted. Jacob set the young of the flock apart by themselves, but made the rest face these streaked and dark-colored ones." So here we see Jacob trying to cheat. The thought was, in those days, is that a vivid sight during conception was thought to leave a mark on the embryo. So if you saw something during conception that was a vivid sight, that would be carried forward to the child that resulted from that. So Jacob was not counting on God to take care of him. Instead, he was counting on cheating his way and cheating the cheater to take care of things. So did God punish Jacob for his lack of trust? Verse 43, it says, "In this way the man grew exceedingly prosperous and came to own large flocks and maid servants and men servants and camels and donkeys." So, sounds kind of strange, but no. Did God bless him because he was cheating Laban? No. He blessed him because he promised to bless him. He blessed him to be a blessing. So despite Jacob trying to screw things up, despite his faithlessness here, God still blessed him. Did Jacob recognize that these blessings were from God? Verses 5 through 9, and you can start really in verse 1, but starting in 5 through 9, Jacob says to his wives, "I see that your father's attitude towards me is not what it was before." Okay, because so many of these sheep were now belonging to Jacob. And you also see that he did things that made sure that the weak ones stayed in Laban's flock and the strong ones went to his flock. So he says, "I see that your father's attitude towards me is not what it was before, but the God of my father has been with me. You know that I've worked with your father with all my strength, yet your father has cheated me by changing my wages 10 times. However, God has not allowed him to harm me. If he said, the speckled ones will be your wages, well, then all the flocks gave birth to speckled young. And then if he said, if the streaked ones will be your wages, then all the flocks bore streaked young. So God has taken away your father's livestock and given them to me." So Laban is obviously upset with him by now because he's losing all this. And Jacob's comment and recognition here is that only God could provide these blessings, that despite what Laban's tried to do to get in the way, despite what I'm trying to do to cheat Laban, this is really from God. He recognized that. What helped him recognize that?
verse 11 to 12. The angel of God said to me in a dream, Jacob. I answered, here I am. And he said, look up and see that all the male goats mating with the flock are streaked, speckled, or spotted, for I've seen all that Laban has been doing to you. So how did he know this was from God? God told him. God told him in a vision. And he said, it's not because of what you're doing, it's because of what I'm doing. And I'm making sure that the speckled and spotted genes out of these male goats are going in to make these baby goats. What else did God tell Jacob in this vision? Well, you can see in verse 3, but also in verse 13, it says, I am the God of Bethel, where you anointed a pillar and where you made a vow to me. Okay, you made these promises. Now, it's time for you to leave this land at once and go back to your native land. So it's time to go back, time to leave Canaan, or Laban, and return to Canaan. But now he's got this family that all they've known is Haran. They don't know anything about Canaan. They're with their family. So how do his wives respond? Well, Rachel and Leah replied, do we still have any share in the inheritance of our father's estate? Doesn't he regard us as foreigners? Not only has he sold us, but he's used up what was paid for us, the bride price. So surely all the wealth that God took away from our father belongs to us and our children. So do whatever God's told you. Okay, so they no longer felt like part of Laban's family. They were no longer committed to Laban. They were now committed to Jacob. And they were unhappy with Laban's deceit, so let's go. And then we see Jacob is deceitful here. Verse 20, it says, moreover, Jacob deceived Laban, the Aramean, by not telling him he was running away. So he fled with all he had, and crossing the river, that is the Euphrates River, he headed for the hill country of Gilead. So he took off, and the night he just took off and tried to make as much distance as he could before Laban realized that he was gone. Well, Laban then finds out that he's gone. How does Laban react to that? Verse 22. On the third day, Laban was told that Jacob had fled. So Jacob had 3 full days of travel ahead of him. So taking his relatives with him, he pursued Jacob for 7 days and then caught up with him in the hill country of Gilead. So quite a ways away they had gone. Why? Because he felt that Jacob had taken everything. If you look at verse 1, Laban's sons were saying, Jacob has taken everything our fathers owned and gained all this wealth from what belonged to our father. So he went to go get it back. Did Laban punish Jacob or try to take back his livestock and wealth? Sure, right? Well, let's look at this, 26 to 29. Laban said to Jacob, what have you done? You've deceived me and you've carried off my daughters like captives in a war. Why did you run off secretly and deceive me? Why didn't you tell me so I could send you away with joy and singing in the music of tambourines and harps? Would he have done that? No. You didn't even let me kiss my grandchildren and my daughters goodbye. You've done a foolish thing. So here he's playing the victim. You know, was he the victim? No. Why was he talking like this? Why wasn't he taking a more active role in taking his property back and his kids back and grandkids and the like? Well, that next verse shows us that. He says, I have the power to harm you, but last night the God of your father said to me, be careful not to say anything to Jacob, either good or bad. Okay, we see that up in verse 24. So God had come to him the night before they met. And Laban had these plans to probably kill Jacob and take everything back. But God intervened, and God protected Jacob, just as God had promised that he would protect Jacob. Well, if he is unable to take things back from Jacob, why did he even bother to come see him that next day? Verse 30. Now you've gone off because you long to return to your father's house, but why did you steal my gods? Okay, his gods were missing. His household gods were missing. Now, verse 34, Rachel had taken the household gods, and she put them inside her camel's saddle and was sitting on them. Laban searched through everything in the tent, but found nothing. When he came to Rachel, she said to her father, don't be angry, my lord, that I cannot stand up in your presence. I'm having my period. So he searched and could not find the household gods. So here you see Rachel had taken the gods, and she was hiding them. And Rachel deceived her father here. Well, how did Jacob respond to this encounter? Well, Jacob was angry, and he took Laban to task. He said, "What is my crime? What sin have I committed that you hunt me down? If the God of my father, the God of Abraham, and the fear of Isaac had not been with me, you would surely have sent me away empty-handed. But God has seen my hardship and the toil of my hands, and last night he rebuked you." Okay? So I have dealt respectfully with you. I've done everything honestly and straight up with you. You're the one who's been the deceiver, and God has reprimanded you for that. Okay? Well, is that all true? You know, we see a lot of it, but Jacob was quite a deceiver. So he deceived Laban many times and worked too, but you see this contest of the deceivers here. Well, they decide that they need to bury the hatchet. So how do they do that? 44. Come now, let's make a covenant. This is Laban talking to Jacob. And you and I, let it serve as a witness between us. So Jacob took a stone and set it up as a pillar. Say another standing stone here. And this place is called Mizpah because he said, "May Yahweh keep watch." Mizpah means watch or watchtower. "May Yahweh keep watch between you and me when we're away from each other." Laban says, "If you mistreat my daughters or you take any wives besides my daughters, even though no one is with us, remember that God is a witness between you and me." Laban also said, "Here's this heap, and here's this pillar I've set up between you and me. This heap is a witness, and this pillar is a witness, that I will not go past this heap to your side to harm you, and that you will not go past this heap and pillar to my side to harm me. Now may the God of Abraham, the God of Nahor, the God of their father, the God of our fathers, judge between us." So Jacob took an oath in the name of the fear of his father Isaac. Okay? So they bury the hatchet, they make a covenant of peace in the name of God, in the name of Yahweh, and set up this pillar and say, neither one of us can they cross it? Yes, they can go past it, but not to harm the other. And God is our witness. Okay? All right? So Jacob was going back home now. He's made the break with Laban. And on in chapter 32, he's heading home. How does God confirm to Jacob that he was doing the right thing and going home and getting away from Laban? Jacob also went on his way, and the angels of God met him. When Jacob saw him, he said, "This is the camp of God." So he named that place Mahanaim, which means two camps. So God sent his angels to meet him as he entered Canaan. Before he nears Canaan, before he enters Canaan, there's something he feels is important. Verse 3, Jacob sends messengers ahead of him to his brother Esau in the land of Seir, the country of Edom, okay, which is down on the southeast side of the Dead Sea, of the Salt Sea. So quite a ways away. He's still quite a ways away, but eventually he knows he's going to meet up with Esau. When he left, what was the situation between those two? Esau wanted him dead. Esau was planning to kill Jacob as soon as his father died. Was Isaac still alive? Well, we don't know that yet. Jacob doesn't know that yet. You know, we're used to instant communications all over the world and being able to see somebody quickly. Well, we didn't have a lot of communication going on here. But he sends messengers to Esau to let him know that I'm coming. He doesn't want Esau to take all of a sudden Jacob and this big entourage shows up, and Esau to take that as a battle cry and a threat of war. So he sends messengers to prepare Esau for his return and to let him know, going on through verse 5 here, he says, "I've got all this stuff. I've got cattle and donkeys and sheep and goats and men servants and maid servants." So in other words, I'm well taken care of. I'm wealthy. I'm not coming to take any of your stuff. Okay? I'm just coming back. So even though he had sold his birthright, Esau had sold his birthright, and all that was Isaac's would belong to Jacob, Jacob's saying, "I don't need that. I'm letting you keep it." So he's not threatening that inheritance for Esau and all that wealth that Esau would care about. Well, how did Esau reply to the news of his brother's return? Verse 6, it says, "When the messengers returned to Jacob, they said, 'Well, we went to your brother Esau, and now he's coming to meet you. And 400 men are with him.'" Uh-oh. Uh-oh. How does Jacob respond to this? Well, you see in verse 7, in great fear and distress, Jacob divides the people who are with him into two groups. Okay? And thinking, well, okay, if Esau comes and attacks one group in verse 8, the group that is left may escape. Okay? Because that's what Esau looks like he's coming to do here. Then Jacob prays, we see in verse 9, and he prays to God and he says, "I am unworthy of all the kindness and faithfulness you have shown your servant. I had only my staff when I crossed this Jordan, but now I've become two groups. Save me, I pray, from the hand of my brother Esau, for I'm afraid he will come and attack me and also the mothers with their children." He goes on to remind God, "Besides, you've said, I'll surely make you prosper and I'll make your descendants like the sand of the sea that cannot be counted. So I know it's not in your will for Esau to kill everybody." So he prays to God. He thanks God for all the blessings. He asks God for protection. He reminds God of his promises. But he divides everything into two groups in case Esau attacks one of the groups. So how does God respond to Jacob's request here? In verse 22, we see Jacob that night got up and took his two wives, his two maidservants, his 11 sons, crossed the ford of the Jabbok stream. After he sent them across the stream, he sent over all his possessions, and then he was left alone, and a man wrestled with him until daybreak. And then verse 28, the man said, your name will no longer be Jacob, but Israel, which means he struggles with God, because you have struggled with God and with men and have overcome. So he wrestles this man, kind of strange, but he wrestles this man all night long until daybreak, and whether it's a man or an angel or whatever, but God's working through this, and God changes his name to God Struggler. Okay, you're no longer going to be called the deceiver. You're not going to be called he struggles with God, which is descriptive of Israel at this of Jacob at this time. He's struggling with God, and also of his descendants. They struggle with God. We see the stories of them struggling with God, but also a name change also denotes a life transition. You're now coming into the promised land. You're now coming into the land of Canaan, and what I've been promising to you, I'm going to be fulfilling and continuing on. Okay, so there's an object lesson here that he gets, that his struggles are now with God, no longer with man. He's been struggling with Laban all these years. He's been struggling with Esau before that. Now he's not going to struggle with men. He's going to be struggling with God. And then God leaves him with a reminder of this event. In verse 25 it says, "The man saw that he could not overpower him. He touched the socket of Jacob's hip so that his hip was wrenched as he wrestled with the man." And we see that was lasting in verse 31. It says, "The sun rose above him as he passed Peniel, and he was limping because of his hip." So he now has this limp that's with him, we believe, for the rest of his life. It's a constant reminder that he's now the God struggler, and that he struggles with God. Okay? So he then goes on, but he's still got Esau out there. You know, he's come back to the land. He's going to see his father. But Esau's still there. He's got to make peace with Esau. So what does he do to manipulate Esau in preparation of their meeting? Well, you read through some of this. But starting verse 13, he spent the night there, and from what he had with him, he selected a gift for his brother Esau. And the next verse is just lots and lots of animals. And then what he does is he takes these, in verse 16, he takes these and puts them in care of his servants, each herd by itself, and he says to his servants, "Go ahead of me," and keep some space between the herds. And he sends them on their way, and when you reach Esau with your herd, say, "Your servant Jacob is coming behind us," for he thought, "I'll pacify him with these gifts that I'm sending ahead. Later when I see him, perhaps he'll receive me." So he sends all these animals in a batch at a time. So they'll be coming to Esau, and Esau will, there'll be these sheep, and then there'll be these cows, and there'll be all these different animals, camels, and in different flocks, and all these different gifts coming to Esau. So, number one, it's especially clear to Esau that Jacob is not trying to steal anything from him, but he's making peace and making things to where Esau owes him. How does... He then still has a concern. Well, Esau hates me. Esau wants to kill me. So how does he deal with that? And plus, he wants to protect his family. He especially wants to protect those that he loves the most. Chapter 33. Jacob looked up, and there was Esau coming with his 400 men. So he divided the children among Leah, Rachel, and the two maidservants. He put the maidservants and their children in the front, and then Leah and her children next, and Rachel and Joseph in the rear. He himself went on ahead and bowed to the ground 7 times as he approached his brother. So this bowing of 7 times signifies total submission. So he took and he put the most expendable part of his family up front so that the others could run if something were to happen. Okay. Did these gifts have their desired effect? Verse 4, well, Esau ran to meet Jacob and embraced him. He threw his arms around his neck and kissed him, and they wept. So you see it did. Going on to 8, Esau said, no, what do you mean by all these droves I met? What a fine favor in your eyes, my lord, he said. But Esau said, I've already got plenty, my brother. Keep what you have for yourself. Jacob says, no, please, I have found favor. If I have found favor in your eyes, accept this gift from me. For to see your face is like seeing the face of God, now that you've received me favorably. Please accept the present that was brought to you, for God has been gracious to me, and all I have all I need. And because Jacob insisted, Esau accepted it. So you see the flattery, you see the deception and kissing up that he's doing here to try to make things right and try to keep Esau from wanting to kill him. And then those gifts make Esau indebted. How does Jacob deceive Esau one last time? Esau says in verse 12, so let's be on our way. I'll accompany you. And Jacob says, no, I've got too many young kids and all that. And so, look, let my lord go on ahead of his servant while I move along slowly at the pace of the droves before me and that of the children. And then I'll come to you in Seir, where you live. Esau says, well, let me leave some of my men with you, okay, to make sure that you'll be coming. And Jacob goes, well, why do that? Just let me find favor in your eyes. And Esau goes, okay, well, he gave me all this stuff. And so he trusts Jacob. Jacob, however, verse 17, went to Succoth, where he built a place for himself and made shelters for his livestock. That's why the place is called Succoth, okay, which means shelters. So he sent Esau ahead, promised to meet Esau in Seir, where Esau lives, but instead he goes a different direction. Okay, so he deceived Esau one last time here. Now they settle near a town called Shechem, we see in verse 34, and in chapter 34, verse 2, when Shechem, the son of Hamor the Hivite, the ruler of that area, saw Dinah, Jacob's daughter, he took her and violated her. So we have a local noble, Shechem, the prince of the area, raped Dinah. Now was this rape a spur-of-the-moment act, or did he have other intentions? 11 to 12, then Shechem said to Dinah's father and brothers, let me find favor in your eyes, and I will give you whatever you ask. Make the price for the bride and the gift I am to bring as great as you like, and I'll pay whatever you ask me. Only give me the girl as my wife. So he took her into his house and raped her and kept her and wanted to keep her as his wife. He wanted to marry her. Okay, he fell in love with her. Well, Jacob and then his sons find out what had happened to their sister, and what's their response? They want to kill the guy. So how do they use deception to get revenge? They're learning from their dad here. Well, because their sister Dinah had been defiled, Jacob's sons replied deceitfully as they spoke to Shechem and his father Hamor. They said, we can't do any such thing. We can't let our sister get married to someone who's not circumcised, so we'll give our consent to you on one condition only, that you become like us by circumcising all your males. Not just you, but all your males. So Shechem go, and they get circumcised, and they talk to the men, and they say, and all the men who went out of the city, verse 24, agreed with Hamor and his son Shechem, and every male of the city was circumcised. Why? Well, if you look at the verses before, they're saying, well, gosh, if we intermarry with these guys, then look at all the stuff they've got. That'll all become our stuff. So they do that. 3 days later, while all of them were still in pain, two of Jacob's sons, Simeon and Levi, Dinah's brothers, took their swords and attacked the unsuspecting city, killing every male. So they deceived the men of Shechem and made them all get circumcised. And while they were healing, while they were in pain, they came and attacked and killed them. Okay, they took all the women and children as captives, as slaves, and took all the goods and values for themselves. Okay, now there's one hidden message in here that that kind of hangs for the Jews in the future. Verse 14 is when they said, "We can't do such a thing. We cannot give our sister to a man who's not circumcised. That would be a disgrace to us." So this is a reminder to the Jews that they're called to be a separate, cut-off people, not to intermix with others. So does Jacob stay there at Shechem after this incident? Well, back in verse 30, chapter 34, it says, "Jacob said to Simeon and Levi, 'You've made trouble on me. You've brought trouble on me by making me a stench to the Canaanites and Perizzites, the people living in this land. We're few in number. And if these people join forces against me and attack me, I and my household will be destroyed.'" So what they did was very risky, because there's other people living around here, and if they hear what we did, that we killed all these people and destroyed this town and took everything, if they've got any brains, they're going to band together and they're going to come attack us. But the brothers reply, "Should we have treated our sister like a prostitute?" Then God says to Jacob in chapter 35, "Go up to Bethel and settle there and build an altar there to God, who appeared to you when you were fleeing from your brother Esau." So go back to the place where I appeared to you, this the stairway to heaven. And so Jacob said to his household and all who were with him, "Okay, we're going to God's country now. So get rid of all the foreign gods you have with you. Purify yourselves. Change your clothes. Then come. Let's go to Bethel, where I'll build an altar to God." And then verse 5, "They set out, and the terror of God fell upon all the towns around them, so that no one pursued them." So God protected them by putting fear in the people instead of having them come out to attack them. All right. How did God respond to Jacob's faithfulness in following him back to Bethel? Starting at verse 10, God said to him, "Your name is Jacob, but you'll no longer be called deceiver. Your name will be Israel," the God struggler. So he named him Israel. And God said to him, "I am El Shaddai, God Almighty. Be fruitful and increase in number. A nation and the community of nations will come from you, and kings from your body. This land I gave to Abraham and Isaac, I give to you, and I will give this land to your descendants after you." Then God went up from him at that place where he had talked with him. So God appeared to Jacob at Bethel and reinstates his promises. He restates his new name, he repeats his promises, and the promises of the covenant. So Jacob returns to Canaan. Verse 19, we see Rachel died and was buried on the way to Ephrath, that is Bethlehem. So they were traveling, so they she died there in Bethlehem and was buried there. Over that tomb, Jacob set up a pillar, and that pillar was still there when this this book was written. And then we see verse 27, "Jacob then came home to his father Isaac in Mamre near Kiriath Arba, that is Hebron, where Abraham and Isaac had stayed. Isaac lived 180 years, then he breathed his last and died and was gathered to his people, old and full of years, and his sons Esau and Jacob buried him." So we see that Esau and Jacob came together to bury. So he had made the peace with his brother Esau, and they coexisted even though they were separated, and came and buried Isaac, their father. But you also see Jacob's favorite wife, Rachel, dying in childbirth when she gives birth to Benjamin. Okay, we've covered a lot of ground. We see Jacob is now back in the promised land in Canaan, and God is reestablishing and restating his covenants and promises to him. Next week, we'll pick up from here and start looking at the next generation. Okay, we're now going to go to the fourth generation of patriarchs. We've had Abraham, then Isaac, then Jacob. Next week, we'll talk about all these brothers and especially the story of Joseph. Let's close with prayer. God, our Father, we thank you, as always, for the stories and the lessons that you give us in your word. We thank you today for the story of Jacob and seeing how even the deceiver can be blessed. Even as we don't do things your way, that you can still call us your own. You call us back to you. You're faithful to your promises, even when we try to get in the way of those. That you blessed Jacob greatly, and you fulfilled your promises to him and brought him back. You protected him and strengthened him so that he could do your will. We ask you to forgive us as you forgave Jacob and Laban and others, as we deceive you and deceive others, as we turn away from you and try to make our plan your plan rather than following your plan. We thank and praise you that your plan will be fulfilled regardless of whether we get in the way or not. We thank and praise you for fulfilling your plan through your Son, Jesus Christ. In his name we pray. Amen.